Hello, welcome and thank you for joining our session. Today I want to talk to you about a community-based TV program that I worked on in Eastern Burma. Eastern Burma is a really unique kind of chronic conflict zone, and lots of IDPs, as the topic says. So, and that brought up a lot of challenges to the program that I want to discuss and present some of the solutions that we came up with that I think were pretty innovative and maybe applicable to other people's programs as well. And I have no relationships, so I need to disclose. So a little bit of background on Burma. Burma, or Myanmar, has been ruled by a military junta since 1962. This is despite a number of protests, revolutions, and even a democratic election. The junta has maintained their power. And just a little clarification for those of you who don't know, Myanmar is the official name of the country that has was placed by the junta. Burma dates back to British colonization. However, most critics of the junta government refer to the country as Burma now. So I'm going to continue to do that for the rest of the presentation. The junta has repeatedly attacked the ethnic minority groups in the country. There are over 100 ethnic groups, mostly on the border regions. And these attacks include violent incursions on the villages, a number of human rights abuses, in particular a lot of forced labor, confiscation of resources, as well as violent human rights abuses, including rape. And they pretty much denied health services and other basic needs to the ethnic groups in these regions. This has resulted in a chronic conflict zone. It's home to more than 500,000 IDPs. And the country's health system is widely criticized. The WHO ranked it the second worst in the world, better only than Sierra Leone. And they spend less than 2% of their national budget on health care. And it's also been named one of the 22 highest TB burden countries by the WHO. So the program I'm going to talk about today was implemented by the Karen Department of Health and Welfare. It's an ethnic community-based organization. It's based in Mae Sot, Thailand currently due to the conflict situation. And they responded to the lack of health programs in the IDP areas of Eastern Burma. The Karen Department of Health and Welfare, or KDHW for short, supports both medical programs and clinics, as well as a number of public health programs that focus on prevention and education, and for a target population of over 100,000 IDPs. All of their programs are run completely independent of the Burmese government, and their TB program, which I'm going to talk about today, is currently operating in three clinic areas. And KDHW came to Global Health Access Program requesting technical support in the development of the program, and we continue to support them in the maintenance. So a quick background on GAP. GAP is the organization that I worked for. It's a U.S. NGO based on the Thai-Burma border. Our administrative office is in Berkeley, but pretty much everything we do happens in our office on the border there. And we're really focused on capacity building. We don't have any of our own health programs. We support other organizations. And these organizations are pretty much anyone who's interested in improving health inside Burma, including community-based organizations, women's groups, youth networks, and human rights documentation groups. And the majority of our work is right here on the eastern border of Burma. Karen State is right about here, which I'm going to talk about, but I do want to highlight that we have our support programs on the northern border with China and the western border with India as well. So the KDHW TB program, as I said, it has three active sites. They're all in northern Karen State up here with the green circles. We did have three sites previously when we piloted the program. Unfortunately, those sites have suspended services due to the conflict there. And we are hoping to reopen services at some point, but they're not there now. So the goals for the program, number one, to meet WHO standards for case detection, diagnosis, and treatment. Because our program is pretty small, we are not necessarily able to provide all of these services on our own to reach these goals, but we work to collaborate with other organizations that can provide these services where we're not able to. Additionally, we promote community-wide TB education and active case detection via screening of 100% of the target population at least once a year. So our objectives in order to meet these goals, so we work to build the capacity of the health workers to be able to maintain this TB program in the three clinic areas. We want to have at least 2 trained laboratory technicians in each area that are able to collect sputum, prepare slides, read the smears to diagnose for TB and for follow-ups as well. We also have 2 medical health workers in each area that are able to identify, treat, and follow up with any suspected cases of TB in their area. As I mentioned before, community-wide screening, active case detection. And I really want to emphasize the WHO standard of 85% treatment completion that we strive for. And for treatment failures and suspected MDR TB cases, we refer to higher level care centers that are able to take these patients and give them the appropriate therapies. So this is a picture of the laboratory room or laboratory in one of our clinic sites. And the program is maintained by 1 program coordinator. Her name is Wawa Pa, means white flower in Karen. And she is in charge of just about everything that the program needs. She leads the trainings, she monitors the program, procures supplies and distributes them, and anything else that comes up. We have 6 medics and 6 lab techs through the 3 areas for a total of 12 health workers, as well as 19 village health workers. And these are people who are chosen by the medics, and they're there to assist the medics and kind of promote integration with the community. They're able to assist with screening, providing DOT therapy and education. And we have a target population of over 10,000 villagers or IDPs. So to summarize the program components, we use clinical case detection, laboratory diagnosis and follow-up. We provide first-line therapy, 6 months DOTS treatment, screening at least once a year, usually twice in each area, community education, and monitoring through site visits as well as clinical chart reviews. So today I want to talk about a number of obstacles that we have. There's 7 here. I'm going to go through each one in a little bit of detail. Some of these are kind of general to international public health, and a lot of them are specific to the Burma situation, which has, with the conflict zone, it's particularly challenging for all programs. TB in particular, you may know, is a pretty complicated disease. It requires very long treatment, so that makes it additionally complicated. So to start off, the big one, military instability. As I mentioned before, the junta government frequently attacks villages and clinics within our program. In addition, their national TB program has refused to cooperate with ours, and between between those 2 things, the government has pretty much stood in the way of this program from the beginning. So in order to maintain a high-quality program, we follow pretty strict guidelines. For example, we have halted or suspended enrollment of new patients in areas that we believed were going to be attacked in the near future. Those patients were referred to other areas that were believed to be more stable at the time, and as soon as the threat had passed, we were able to resume enrolling patients there. Each clinic has developed a contingency plan for what to do if they are attacked and they have patients in therapy at the time. This includes they have, you know, medicines hidden in the jungle that they can access in case they aren't able to access the clinics or if it's taken from the clinics. The patients are notified beforehand, and they are aware that if they do have to flee the clinics, they're expected to travel with a healthcare worker, and the health workers will track down their patients and find them if they have to. And the healthcare workers are also prepared Also, as I mentioned before, we actually suspended services in three areas that we really didn't think you could safely have a TB program there at the time. We were really concerned about default rates. So unfortunately, they aren't offering services right now, but if the situation gets better, they will again. And the independence of the program, I mean, they operate regardless of any political atmosphere, no matter what's going on, and they're able to provide services to anyone in their area. Kern's state is incredibly mountainous and jungle. It's full of jungles and pretty hard to walk through, even for people who live there. And we want to make sure that all patients have access to our program, no matter what. And this picture here is kind of in the central clinic area of one of our areas. I mean, you might be able to see it's pretty steep, and if you can imagine during monsoon season, pretty close to impossible to walk up that hill. And this is actually, you know, a central area. The outskirts of the areas are much worse, to just give you an idea. So some of our solutions, we worked with the health workers to map each of their villages and used this to develop plans for their door-to-door screening as well as delivering DOTS therapy. And we also collaborate with other health workers to get to hard-to-reach areas. This includes health workers from other programs, other areas whose clinics may actually be closer to the outskirts of our areas, as well as village health workers that do work with the clinic health workers, and they live in the further away areas. Limited communication has been a huge issue for us. It's incredibly difficult to communicate between the field sites and the central office in Thailand. And we do try to maintain consistent communication in order to monitor all of our patients in case there is any complications, and so we can make sure we can provide additional resources in a timely manner. So we worked with the health workers to develop monthly reporting protocols, which sounds very nice up here, but it gets pretty nitty-gritty and a little dangerous sometimes. For example, one of our protocols involved our health workers would get on a raft and float down the river that divides Thailand and Burma until they reached a place where they could get cell phone reception from Thailand. And keep in mind that this border is like heavily manned by a number of military groups, and that was the only way that they could get in communication with us. Additionally, other areas that are further inland or further inside the country would plan set days in advance, and they would have to walk for a day or two, maybe to another area that had a satellite phone and could call into our office. We also used our trainings and site visits as an opportunity to collect patient information. We hold two trainings each year, and in between each one, there is a site visit. So at the very least, every 3 months, we are getting updates on all of the patients. And we're currently researching the implementation of satellite phones in all clinic areas. This has been going on for a little while, but we are making sure that the whole community and the clinics and everyone involved with the health organization is on board before we go any further. So that's still in the research and discussion stage right now. So in our program offers pretty simplified treatments, and because of that, it limits who are able to enroll. However, it does help us ensure that we have treatment completion. So for example, we do not enroll any patients that are sputum smear negative, any patients that have been previously treated because they may have developed drug resistance, or any patients with severe liver problems because they are not equipped to deal with that in the clinics. So in order to do this, we refer all of our complicated patients to refugee camps in Thailand or hospitals where there are people who are able to provide these services. And we coordinate with health organizations all over the border to see who's able to accept these patients, what resources people have, and who's able to help out there. Okay, poverty obviously is a huge issue in international health in rural areas. And we just want to make sure that all of our villagers have access to the TB program, regardless of their wealth. So the TB program is provided free of cost. Diagnosis, treatment is all covered. In addition, We provide food supplements to all patients, and if the patient chooses to relocate closer to the clinic, their family and themselves will be provided with food and housing. For the patients that do need to be referred, we also support all of their transportation costs to the referral sites, including if they have to cross the border. Before 2007, when we implemented this program, TB knowledge in the community was pretty low, and our goal was to improve knowledge of the disease as well as of the TB program itself, and so that people would know where to go if they needed help or if they had questions. And we did this using mass education, and every screening event we did, whether it was a community event or door-to-door, included an education component. And we have the village health workers that are in the community, and they're just members of the community who do help to provide a kind of a link between the community and the health workers. And any patient that is enrolled for TB treatment gets pretty intensive education about the importance of adherence, the side effects they might face in the future, as well as how to prevent further transmission. And the final obstacle I'm going to talk about is laboratory training. In the past, until recently actually, we had a partner NGO who was able to provide really high quality training for all of our lab techs, and they also performed quality control on our slides. Unfortunately, they have suspended all of their programs on the border, so we are currently seeking a new partner organization. However, the experienced lab techs have really stepped up. These are lab techs who were trained by this organization in the past. So they've helped out, they train the new techs, and they also have kind of performed internal quality assurance of the less experienced techs. This isn't ideal, but this is what we're able to do right now. So with all those obstacles, what have we accomplished? We have over 20 community health workers who have been trained as TB medics and lab technicians, done this through 7 trainings. Each year, over 10,000 IDPs have been screened for TB symptoms, and that includes the education. We've enrolled 48 patients in our 6-month treatment program, have a treatment success rate of 89%. 5% have been lost to follow-up, 2% treatment failure, 2% referred out of the program, and 2% died. I do want to just point out the hazard of small numbers, in that the 5% lost to follow-up is actually only 2 patients, and they are both from one of the clinics that has suspended their services. We actually do believe they have completed their therapy, but we cannot track down the documentation, and communication there has been particularly limited. The program has been a little more stable the past few years. So since 2009, our treatment success rate is actually 92%, and for 2010 so far, we are at 100%, which is really exciting and shows the development of the program. So in conclusion, KDHW has really demonstrated that community-based organizations are able to bridge the gaps in access to healthcare IDPs. The government was not providing the care they needed, and it is incredibly difficult for international organizations to access these areas. So KDHW is really the perfect solution to this. And they're able to maintain a small but really effective TB program, even in a conflict zone, that is managed by community health workers with only moderate oversight from the program coordinator and a little bit of technical support. And the challenges that I've discussed today, as well as others, are overcome just with detailed planning, a firm commitment to treatment adherence, and collaboration with other organizations who are able to provide services that we can't at the time. And in the future, what we're continuing to work on, we're hoping to expand our target area, first by scaling up screening and reaching even further away from the clinics. We also want to increase the number of clinic areas that are supporting the program, including hopefully bringing back the sites that have suspended their services for now. We want to identify the appropriate technology to improve communication. I mentioned before satellite phones. This might be the solution, it might not, so we're going to keep working on that until we find what works best for everybody. And collaborating with other organizations for cases that we aren't able to handle, and lab training and quality control. And we're also interested in evaluating antibiotic resistance in the area, MDR and XDR drug-resistant TB has been identified in migrant workers on the border. None of these cases were associated at all with our program, but it does indicate that it's becoming an issue, and it's something we're interested in finding out more about. Okay, and in terms of acknowledgments, I just wanted to thank KDHW, which has just been so committed to providing health services in IDP areas, and in particular, the program coordinator, Wawa Pa, Global Health Access Program, which provides technical support and funding to the program, and in particular, the people who contributed to this presentation, I would like to thank. And the Hussman Foundation has provided all of our, a substantial portion of our funding. So that's it. The KDHW TB program staff and GAP staff would like to thank you.